And welcome back to side two of this cassette, the DX Audio Service for October 1986. And to start off side two of this cassette, I'd like to bring to your attention our business report for the 1986 National Radio Club Convention. As you know, Phil Wayne and I did attend this year's convention in Newcastle, Delaware, and had a real good time. I'm sorry to say, though, that not one member of the DX Audio Service attended this year's convention, nor expressed any interest in the convention. Mike Nitter and I talked at great length about many topics dealing with next year's convention to the DX Audio Service's history and future. Now, one of the major concerns right now is that the DX Audio Service may shortly become a thing of the past. We discussed the problems, and here they are in brief form. First of all, is the number of members joined to the service. The reason the service was started in the first place was that several people wrote to the National Radio Club in late 84 and early 85 and said that there was a need for material from DX News to be provided to the blind and that such a service would draw, quote, hundreds of members. Well, at last count, we only have about 25 to 30 members. And interestingly enough was the fact that one of the most vocal persons to incite this when they contacted the National Radio Club has never subscribed to the service, nor has answered any of our letters after the service was started. We are also having several problems in getting new members to join. The main problem seems to be piracy and a complete unwillingness by many organizations to publicize our existence. On the piracy front, we have found that there have been, and still may be, many members who are copying tapes and or sending their tapes to other people for the sole purpose of getting around paying the dues. We know that it's happening, and unfortunately, the ones who are doing it will ultimately cause the service's demise. Now, another problem is public relations, and this seems to be a very bad problem. We presently have a list of reading services, program hosts, and organizations for the blind. We mail out information to them every month. Now, out of this entire list, we know of only two reading services and one show host who have mentioned the DX Audio Service. Letters to some organizations have gone unanswered. Radio stations have refused to mention us, saying it's not that important. And we've even been told that the service is not worthwhile to devote a couple of minutes to. Now, my personal feeling is that the DX Audio Service is probably one of the better services around and that the membership receive a quality publication that is needed. However, the National Radio Club must look at the DX Audio Service as a business operation, which can't run in the red. Although we are a non-profit service, we have to pay for the tapes, answer letters, maintain studios and equipment, and do a whole lot more. With the membership as small as we are, we just cannot run it efficiently, especially when the service was started and projected with membership of 100+. The bottom line from HQ is that the DX Audio Service will have to have a large net increase in membership within the next few months, or else it will close effective the end of December. Now, should this happen, every member with issues due in 1987 will be prorated funds back to them for the remainder of their subscription, so nobody will lose any money. We shall continue to operate as normal and attempt to get the reading services and radio stations to publicize us and cooperate with us. I have to say at this point that we should congratulate Glenn Hauser of World of Radio on WRNO Worldwide for his help. Glenn has mentioned us several times and we have received members via his broadcast. And I also have to thank several of the reading services that have mentioned us in the past. We know that there is a definite PR problem since only five of you have joined us via hearing us on a reading service or on radio. The rest have joined via word of mouth and usually contact us with an opening statement like, "Why haven't I heard of you guys before?" Well, to be honest with you, we're trying, and I don't know how much more I nor the other editors of DX Audio Service can do to keep the service going. We've been facing a brick wall from many sides and have even been ignored by ANARC, the Association of North American Radio Clubs, who is supposed to represent the National Radio Club and the DX Audio Service. Now, as of January 1986, ANARC has said nothing about us, even though our press releases are sent to them by two different sources each month and are being received. Now, at one point, we were told that our press releases were arriving late. However, that doesn't hold water since 90% of our press releases simply explain about the service and contain no dated material. In another case, one Shortwave DX program host has stated that they don't want to mention the DX audio service since they don't have the time to devote to it. Funny, after listening to 34.6 hours of their programming, I counted at least 2 to 3 minutes out of every hour where we could at least have been just mentioned. I sincerely hope that the DX audio service continues, even though every editor gets no compensation for their services, and in most cases they pay to be on the service in one form or another. Every editor enjoys providing the material to you here on the DX audio service. The only reason for the DX audio service to fold is the number of members, period. If any of you know of a way to help, please speak up. I would also encourage you to get the word out as soon as possible to others via word of mouth or by any means, and to write to the hosts of DX programs and program editors on shortwave stations and editors of reading services and talk up the DX audio service. Let them know how valuable the service is. I'm not saying this as a means to excite people and drum up business. I'm just bringing this to your attention since HQ has told us that we cannot enter the 1987 fiscal year with only a handful of members. It's just not possible nor feasible. If we do close the service, there will be no plans to reopen the service nor formulate it into any other form. All the names, titles, and formats are copyrighted and owned solely by myself, so the DX audio service will be not resurrected by another person. The reason for this is that the DX audio service has long been respected amongst the broadcast community, and I don't want another individual using the names or formats or ideas to produce another service which may not be up to the credibility the DX audio service has stood for. This will be the last time which I'll address this issue, and sincerely hope that I will be with you on the next year. But if I'm not, at least now you know the score. Again, I sincerely hope that if anyone out there has any ideas on how we can break this public relations block, please contact myself or Mike Nitter. Mike Nitter's address is the National Radio Club Incorporated, Post Office Box 24, Cambridge, Wisconsin 53523-0024, and my address is 706 McKenzie, that's M-A-C, capital K-E-N-Z-I-E, Lima, Ohio 45805-1835. And both Mike and I will be looking forward to receiving your letters and any ideas or suggestions that you might have. Now let's get back on a more positive note with Mr. John Bowker with a look at the travelogue, and I understand that his column hasn't been suffering from too many contributions. John has a good number of IDs for us on this travelogue, so John, let's have it.
Well, Fred, you're right. We got an outstanding response to last month's edition. So we're going to continue it again. This month we're going to go through 570, 580, 590, and 600. And we'll get to that in just a moment, but I've got to tell you that Tim Hendel in Miami sent in some very clean WQAM breaks. So the next time we go through our frequency tapes, down around 560, WQAM will be on that tape, because if you recall, it was missing from last month. That's a good reason. I've never been down that far with a tape recorder in hand at a time when I could get WQAM. And Ron Clark and Jeanette sent in 3 cassettes of station breaks. Can you believe it? Oh, boy. I tell you, what I'm doing is going through those cassettes and making sure that I know what frequency each of the stations is on, and then, you know, one by one, we're putting them on the frequency tapes. So that's going to be a lot of fun. And Ron, that's, wow, quite a labor of love. Terrific. Bob Walker, too, a regular editor here on the DX Audio Service. Bob's been active in the National Radio Club for many years, has sent in a cassette with a lot of stations in Michigan, around Grand Rapids, and in Kentucky, all over the place. So anyway, it's and we've had other comments, too. So, you know, I'm just absolutely elated that putting this travel log, I guess that's what we're calling it, huh, together by frequency tapes, is something that the readership, listenership, whatever, the subscribers are interested in hearing. So today, now, I do have some explanation to do on each of these. I'll do the 570 tape, and what you're going to find at 570 on the tapes that I have for each frequency, I only have 2 stations, and you'll hear them in a minute. As a matter of fact, let's do the 570 tape right now, and you'll see exactly what I mean.
WGMS AM Bethesda, FM Washington, serving the nation's cultural capital.
We have world and national news up next. This is WMCA, Strauss Communications in New York. This is Good Guy Radio.
AP Network News. Good morning, I'm Cynthia Hecht.
Well, okay, now those are the two stations that we have for you this month at 570. But now, before you rush to your tape recorders, guys and gals, let me tell you, somewhere in this room, somewhere, and I think I can find them just given the time, are IDs from KLAC in Los Angeles. And let's see, we have a few others too. I have WSYR, I know, in Syracuse. I recorded WWNC in Asheville at one point, and I'm not sure quite how good it is, but we'll find out together later on. WKBN, heaven's sakes, you know that WKBN, with all deference to Jerry Starr, we listened to WKBN all the way across Route 80, you know, to Williamsport, Pennsylvania. For some reason, their 5,000 watts must be aimed as a pencil right along the I-80 there. So they come in very well. And WFAA in Dallas, I have a number of IDs from WFAA, but they simply haven't been transcribed from my chronological tapes over to these tapes yet. So you might argue, hey, maybe we started this idea of the frequency tapes a little too early. But let me assure you, the problem with the travelogue, the way it was being done, increasingly I find that my trips originate at Newark Airport, and I fly into some of these other cities now more often than drive. And somehow having a recorder going in the airplane, you know how to fasten a seatbelt. There's just very little going on in an airplane to record high. So anyway, we thought we would change the system, and the response has been good, and I'm most appreciative. Without further ado, let's move on to the 580 kilohertz tape.
This is WLES Radio 580 on your dial in Lawrenceville. Time now for the latest news from the Associated Press and the WLES Newsroom.
CFRA News to 5 was brought to you by Derwin Opticians, with three locations to serve you in Ottawa. Tomorrow, the news will be presented by Lewis Motors.
Bill Lussier, CFRA Contemporary News.
You're listening to 580 Radio, WIBW in Topeka.
You're in tune with Big Wolf Radio, WOFE 580 on your dial, Rockwood, Tennessee, serving Rockwood and surrounding areas. The time is 10:30, and it's time now for the church news, brought to you as another public service of Bill Breeze.
It's just about 30 seconds before 9 o'clock here on WILL Urbana, Public Radio 580 from the University of Illinois, serving Eastern Illinois and Western Indiana from the campus of University of Illinois. Well, at any rate, this is...
Yeah, I always felt kind of sorry for that guy. That was recorded in 1974, and you wonder what he's doing for work today. Well, now, let's see. In addition to the stations you just heard from 580, I have in this room pretty good, pretty clean IDs from WDBO in Orlando, WTAG in Worcester, and WIBW in Topeka, which came in surprisingly well in Kansas City, I thought once. So, you know, if any of you have IDs from other 580 stations than the ones that you just heard or that I just mentioned, we'd love to add them to the collection here at the DX Audio Service. And the next time we go through these tapes, you'll hear the new IDs that have been added. Okay, we move right along now to the 590 tape.
WOW News time, 5 minutes past 7. Temperature reading in Omaha now, 70 degrees, Lincoln 65.
In Honolulu, KGMB Radio.
Good afternoon, this is Bill Edwards reporting what's new for Long's Drug Stores.
On the coconut wireless, on the coconut wireless.
This is WPLO News.
555 in Atlanta, David Cranshaw, WPLO News. The cost of living.
A look into the environment of Lexington and the Commonwealth.
This is Mark Huffman for WVLK News.
This is WEEI in Boston. WEEI News Time is now 10:59. I'm Don Gordon. Here's what's happening.
KCO, Kalamazoo.
Okay, that wraps up 590, at least for this month. In addition to that, in this room, I have recordings from WARM in Scranton, Pennsylvania. And I drive right by the three towers of WROW on the New York Thruway at least once a month. So trust me, I have good clean breaks from them. They simply didn't make it onto the 590 tape. Okay, let's move along, finally for this month at least, to the 600 kilohertz tape.
Music, can't you like it? From 600 WICC. 44 degrees on this Sunday morning in Bridgeport. We had 6.5 minutes away from news at 12, and then the Sunday afternoon sounds of the city with Jerry Kay.
This is the Cardinals Baseball Network. Play Word Watcher, the crossword puzzle contest exclusively on WREC in Memphis, AM 60.
Music everywhere will be exactly 1 o'clock, right here on the Big 600, CFCF, Montreal.
This is CFCF.
CFCF 600, Montreal.
12 o'clock. This is CFCF 600. The sports voice of Montreal.
Yeah, well, there I was in the stands at Jarry Park. Now, there are very few of you who know where Jarry Park is, but I'll make that a quiz for this week, this month, whatever. And recording the CFCF English language play-by-play broadcasts of the Expos baseball games, which is a rarity in Montreal, if any of you have been there recently. Now, in addition to those IDs that you just heard at 600, I have good clean breaks from WVOG in New Orleans. I have WCAO in Baltimore. WTAC in Flint, I have good enough. And WSJS in Winston-Salem, because I used to do employment recruiting in that part of North Carolina. So, we're all set. But if you have any of the other IDs at 600, please let me know. Incidentally, those of you who have sent in IDs on tape, I'm going to be returning your tape to you. Give me a few weeks, will you, so I can get the, lift the IDs off them cleanly, make sure I've got a good copy. And then I'm going to be returning your tape, or an equivalent, but I intend to return your tape, to you, so that you're only out the cost of postage. And you might say, well, gee, postage isn't free. And I'd say, yeah, fella, that's the way it goes. It's a hobby. But I don't want to keep your tapes, because the DX Audio Service tapes that I know some people would consider using and have used are excellent material, and you can use them yourself. So I'll be returning those to you, perhaps with a little message on them or something like that. So now, if you'd like to fill in any of the IDs that I simply haven't referred to in this entire tape, please send it to me. My name is John Bowker, B-O-W-K-E-R, and my home address is 14 Canoe, that's spelled C-A-N-O-E, Brook Drive, Princeton Junction, New Jersey, 08550. I'll be looking forward to you, and thanks again for your hearty response, and perhaps a few of the others could be sending in some tapes, and we'll really make this a nationwide sort of collection of IDs. The idea of getting every station in the country on tape is going to escape us, but we can make an attempt. What do you think, Fred? Back to you, fella.
Sounds pretty good, John. You know, I think I found a DXer which is older than you, and that is Ernie Cooper. Ernie and I have known each other probably coming on 5-6 years or so. We've attended many conventions together. And recently, at the 1986 National Radio Club Convention, I pinned him down at the bar and talked to him about, old-time DXing and a lot of other things. And here's a portion of that interview with Ernie Cooper from the 1986 National Radio Club Convention. Talking to Ernie Cooper from the 1986 National Radio Club Convention here in Newcastle. Ernie, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks a lot. It's nice to be here.
Yeah, Ernie, I'd like to ask a few questions. Your expertise, as we should say. First of all, let me ask you a little bit about history now. When did you first start DXing?
Well, I started when my father introduced me to the hobby back in the early 30s, about 1931. In fact, he died in 1931. I had, I was allowed to sit up with him occasionally and listen to Distance on Sunday mornings. And then I sort of picked the hobby up myself. I thought it sounded kind of exciting.
So your father was a DXer then?
Yes, he was.
Hey, what were some of the first stations you heard as a child, I guess?
Well, I think some of the earlier ones were all those big Chicago stations that are so familiar to many of the DXs, and I guess other people too, like WBBM in Chicago and WLS and WMAQ, WTAM it was in those days in Cleveland. And a good many of those stations were very easy to hear in those days. In fact, some of them are still very easy to hear, even though there are many other news stations that have come on the air in the same frequencies.
Okay, now out on the Cape, you probably have no problem in hearing like WGN in Chicago and stuff, but back in the so-called old days, you used to be able to hear the low-power stations, too. What would, say, be your furthest catch back in the old days?
Back in the old days, when I used to get up early in the morning and tune around, the furthest, I think, would have to be Buenos Aires, Argentina, which I think is around 5,500 to 6,000 miles from where I lived at that time. It was Brooklyn, New York.
Okay, now, as far as in the domestic United States, where would that be?
I was able to pick up some of the Class 4 low-powered stations on the frequencies like 1230, 1240 on the West Coast, including stations that ran 50 watts. KPPC in Pasadena, California was one of them. KRKO in Everett, Washington was another. 50-watt stations, and they made it right across the country. It was everything else on that frequency was off the air.
What would you say would be your most unusual catch, say, in the past 10 years or so?
Boy, that's a tough question. Let me think about that one for a minute. Can we come back to that?
Sure. As far as Canadian DX, what would be your furthest Canadian station you've heard from Massachusetts or Brooklyn?
Well, we can get stations like CBK on the low frequency of 540 fairly often. Well, we used to be able to. I can't say you can do it anymore because some of the eastern stations are running all night now. That's the trend these days. Every station that has full-time power, full-time license, operates 24 hours a day and seemingly 7 days a week. The only time they go off is when they have a mishap.
Okay, here's another hard question about some DX. What's the hardest catch you've had as far as a low-power station would be concerned?
Well, we're here in Delaware right now, and that comes to mind. The WNRK up the road here a little way in Newark, Delaware, put on a test program last winter, or last autumn, I guess it was. They're 1,000 watts, and they are very directional away from the northeast. I was able to pick them up in Provincetown, Massachusetts, which is at the tip of Cape Cod, very poorly. The other stations on that frequency, which would have interfered had they been on, were WEZE in Boston, which was off the air, and CIHI in Fredericton, New Brunswick, also fortunately was off the air, enabling me to hear a weak signal from the station down here in Delaware. That was quite an exciting catch for me.
Okay, now getting back to, you know, our domestic DX, so to speak, from Provincetown, out on the Cape, you've heard, say, what is your furthest west catch from that location?
KFI in Los Angeles and KNX I've heard there. I think those days are gone now, though. The frequencies are taken over by so many stations running 24 hours.
You have problems with the Cubans?
Yes, indeed. There's a lot of Cubans on the low end of the dial. 640 is one of their high-powered stations, and that certainly makes it very difficult to hear anything out west. Even though we do have a directional rotating antenna, you still can't get that Cuban out completely. They run a lot of power down there.
Okay, now, getting more current here now, often I'll look through the bulletins and see your name popping up and on the logs and stuff, hearing different tests and things. What kind of tip would you give to someone who's just getting into DXing about how to nab that rare station out there?
Just patience is one of the greatest things. And I think the best time to try is these days is towards sunset. Maybe starting with an hour or so before sunset, when signals begin to come in. sun has some way of killing signals in the daytime. As it gets lower in the sky, the conditions change rapidly, and seemingly one night can be very different from the next night. It seems like you have a new ball game every time you try it. I would say try it just around sunset time, and shortly thereafter, you get stations to the west of that point.
Is there any benefit to, say, staying up till 3 in the morning, 4 in the morning, trying to hear something?
Well, I still do it, but I don't very often catch anything new. I've been at this hobby for 54 years now. There isn't much left out there that's new that I can hear now with all the signals going all night.
Pretty much the same old boys there on the channel, right?
They sure are. Well, in the old days, you know, every station, almost every station, signed off at midnight or 1 a.m., opening up every frequency. And anyone that was on testing was a cinch to hear them. All you had to do was get up and tune in, and there they were.
And obviously back several years ago, several decades ago, also your local channels were a lot more open than they are now.
They certainly were. We used to think a little station out in Chicago was annoying, or as some of the DXers call it, a pest, WEDC in Chicago.
That's the one on 1240, right?
Yes. They ran all night, and people got very annoyed with it, but they were very friendly with DXers. Quite often, they would sign off just for the DXers to hear another station on the frequency. I thought that was a pretty nice thing, because it was commercially sponsored. Well, the owner of the station was the automobile corporation, and that was their only sponsor. They advertised themselves.
Is that where the call letters came from?
As EDC, Emil Denmark Cadillac.
So you owned an automobile dealership and a radio station too, huh?
And he used the radio station primarily to promote the Cadillac dealership.
Now, one last question here before we go. I'd like to ask you, have you ever heard any international DX as far as Europe or, some of the countries down by the Bermuda and such?
Oh, yes. In fact, even before the sun goes down, we can quite often hear the West Indies, Colombia, and Venezuela. Venezuela usually comes in around the... Oh, you can still see the sunlight, and Venezuelans will be coming in quite well. And the European stations, well, I thought when I moved to Cape Cod I'd be able to hear them almost every day. It hasn't turned out to be that way. They do come in sometimes, and they're in between the channels we have. Everyone is 10 kilohertz apart. The Europeans are on a 9 kilohertz difference, so there are a lot of stations in between where you can, if you have a selective receiver, get in there and hear those stations. But it hasn't come in as regularly as I thought it would.
No, I've heard, Langendorf, Germany, I think it's on 1596 or 94, something like that, and there's sometimes an Algerian station on 891. Have you ever heard any, like, say, England or United Kingdom stations, some of those stations from the Independent Broadcast Authority?
Yes, there's a fairly new station in London on 1548. I heard, I believe it was not last winter, but the winter previous to that. I was fortunate in the station on 1540 in Albany, WPTR, was off the air that morning. They are very splattery, and they would have interfered and made it impossible, but they were off. And here was jolly old England coming in there in 1548. I got a nice report and nice verification back.
What about some other countries that you've heard over in Europe? And I guess we could even go into Africa and stuff. Have you heard, say, a station in Africa or a station in Eastern Europe?
Yes, we had a report for a station in Leningrad on 1144, I think it was. Well, I was turning around just one evening, not looking for Europeans. I was looking for twilight stations in this country, daytime stations signing off, when I noticed the signal in between there, and it was Russian language. I stayed with it, and I was able to get a letter back from the Russian on that frequency. I've also heard there's an African on 1404. I think that is the name of the country. I can't think of the name of the country, but it's in fairly often. And Norway has been coming in quite well on 1314.
What about Radio Luxembourg?
Luxembourg is gone now. They're on an even frequency, 1440. And there were just too many American stations on that frequency to let him come through.
Hey, one last thing. I just thought another question, which would be very pertinent to what we're talking about as far as your DX catches and stuff. What type of station, if you were to try to describe to someone how your station is or what kind of equipment you use and how you use it, what exactly do you use to nab all this great DX?
Well, right now I have the Hammerland HQ180, and I'm looking for a new receiver because this thing is getting a little old. As I am, and right now it's in need of repair. While it's workable, it gives me the feeling that any minute it's going to conk out. But I'd like to get something in a solid state, which is equal in performance to the Hammerland. And I also use a rotating antenna, an SM2 it's called, space magnet.
That's an amplified loop?
Yes, and that's a very interesting piece of equipment. You can turn it around, it sits right on top of the radio, you just turn it around in different directions, and you can sometimes just change the station on your radio just by moving the antenna. It's really fantastic.
Thanks a lot for talking with us, Ernie.
Well, I very much appreciate you asking me, Fred. Thank you very much.
Comedy radio is the new thrust of the programming at Westport, Connecticut-based WMMM-AM. According to promotion director and jack-of-all-trades, Mike Lapatino, the station is the first in the country to switch to the new comedy music blend being supplied by the Radio Group of New York, a subsidiary of the LaMarca Group. Tapes of routines by the top comedians of the past 30 years as well are avant-garde comics are played along with thematically linked music. Local comics also are given a boost on WMMM. Comedy radio has been developed over the past 2 years to help reverse the declining trends of AM radio. The Radio Group has stockpiled an extensive library of comedy albums, their material allowing for cut-ins for local disc jockeys, news, and commercials. Begun in 1959, WMMM has been a commercial community station specializing in adult contemporary music. It's on the air 7 days a week, 6 a.m. to 8:30 p.m., and is applying for permission to broadcast 24 hours a day and to increase the power of its signal. For the DX Audio Service, this is Phil Tallman.
Thank you very much, Phil. You've probably heard Paul Harvey talk about the news and then the other side. Well, Bob Walker has that type of a story in another report from Anarchon 86, which we'd like to finalize this side of the tape with. Here's Bob.
At Anarchon 86, Bob Walker for the DX Audio Service with Tom Kephart of SpeedX. And Tom, I guess the first question is, what is SpeedX?
Well, SpeedX is a club for shortwave listeners and also for shortwave utility listeners in North America and all over the world. We have about 900 members right now, and about 800 of those are in the United States and the other 100 at all other points of the globe, so we get a pretty good idea of what's being heard all over the world because we have so many members all over the place. We welcome subscribers to the magazine. We have an associate membership level for people who want to subscribe to the magazine, and we also have a full members level for people who contribute to the magazine. And when you become a full member, you can vote in the club's elections for the board of directors and other policy changes that go on, which don't happen very often. Some of the full members say that we don't make enough important decisions and they don't get to vote in them. But nevertheless, that's something that a lot of our members enjoy because it gives them something to work towards.
You talked about utility stations. What's a utility station? For most of our listeners, they're primarily medium wave DXers. I know they've heard the term. What is a utility station?
Well, a utility station is generally anything that's not specifically intended for the general public. That's the way we define it. So, for example, your medium wave stations would not be a utility station. They're the broadcasters intending you to hear that. On shortwave stations that are intended to be heard by the public, for example, the Voice of America, the BBC, Radio Canada International, to name three of the more popular ones, are just regular broadcasters. Utility station, one of the more commonly known in the United States, are the time signal stations on shortwave, WWV from Fort Collins, Colorado, and the one in Hawaii, WWVH. It also includes things like maritime coastal stations. Sometimes if you are not familiar with it, but you have a shortwave multiband radio, you can tune into certain parts of the band and you hear conversations back and forth. Sounds like telephone conversations or Coast Guard ships calling a shore station and requesting assistance or just telling them where they are. Aeronautical frequencies for the cross-country flights. The airlines can call cross-country using shortwave. They generally use higher frequencies of VHF and UHF frequencies when they get close to an airport. But for cross-country, for example, if a flight takes off from Dallas and they're flying up to Gander, Newfoundland, when they get about halfway, they'll contact Gander on shortwave because they can the signal will travel, you know, a good distance. So they can be over Tennessee and they're talking to Gander's airport in Newfoundland, checking their flight pattern, checking their flight plan, letting them know approximately what time they're expected into the airport, so that it's not a surprise when the air traffic controller all of a sudden sees the blip on the screen.
Okay, I know the club has probably the most comprehensive utility guide being published by anybody. Something about that. Does the utility guide cover the long wave beacons as well for the utility stations, or is it primarily just in the short wave bands?
No, the utility guide, thank you very much. We think it's one of the most comprehensive guides. It does cover beacons. We have a section which was added about a year and a half ago on beacons, both in the short wave band, the single letter high frequency beacons, SLHFB. I don't know that much about them myself. I've read the section, but I've not actually heard one myself. And we also cover, not necessarily in the guide, but in the monthly magazine, something that people who listen to long wave and medium wave often hear, the airport non-directional beacons, which planes use to home in on the airport. And they're generally in the frequency range from 150 kilohertz up to 500 kilohertz. Most every airport has one. It generally has two or three letters identifying it, and it's usually in code. And we do cover that in our utilities column. I mean, we only have three or four members who are really into those, but there is a very small minority, and they enjoy them. And my receiver doesn't cover it, but if it did, you know, that's something that's very popular.
One of the questions we get a lot on the DX Audio service is the frequencies, the locations of the various DX programs from around the world. Is there coverage of that in SpeedX for finding the easy ones, I guess, especially since most of our members are medium wave DXers? They may not have the miles of antennas strung out across the fields.
Absolutely. Our magazine, really, we try to aim it at all levels of shortwave listeners. Some of the magazines tend to avoid printing loggings from like Voice of America, Radio Canada, because they figure that, you know, their membership ought to be able to hear it easily. And so why bother taking this space? We don't see it that way. We print the loggings from the VOA we get from members. We welcome the loggings we get from those people. And in the loggings, both in the logging section, we will have people sending in loggings where they heard the Shortwave Listeners Digest, for example, on Radio Canada International. You can find it there. We have a station skeds column, which lists entire schedules for broadcasters, both difficult and easy ones. Generally, in the station skeds column, we have easier to hear broadcasters. We'll have their North American schedule in English, so it's pretty easy to find things that way. And usually, we'll list the times that their DX program is on, too, that make it easy to pick that up. And in our articles section, we often have reviews of and text of what happened in a particular DX program, if a particularly interesting piece of news came out on one of the DX programs in a given month. We'll have a member send in a review of it, you know, what he heard.
Okay, I guess before I let you go, why don't you give us some information on how we can find out more about SpeedX, how to get a sample issue, and in fact, how to subscribe after this. Maybe someone has gotten the urge now to subscribe to SpeedX sight unseen.
All right. Well, we'd certainly like to hear from anybody that would be interested. A sample copy of SpeedX to North America, and that includes both Canada, Mexico, and the United States, is $1.50 in U.S. funds. Subscription in North America is $18. And then once again, that's either Canada, Mexico, or the United States. And the address to send to for either a sample copy or for a membership would be to SpeedX, that's SpeedX, 7738 East Hampton Street, and that's in Tucson, Arizona, 85715 in the United States.
Okay, Tom, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you very much, Bob.
And as Paul Harvey would say, there is always another side to the news. I'm trying to remember when the last time was when my wife would magically appear at the door at 3 o'clock in the morning, look at me and say, "Are you still up?" Here's Bob with a look at the DXer's wife.
The DX Audio Service, in its attempt to present all sides of a story, is again striving toward that goal. Just moments ago, you heard an interview with Tom Kephart of SpeedX. And now we have the other side of the story, Doreen Kephart. Doreen, thanks for joining us here on the audio service.
Hi, Bob. How are you doing today?
Real good. I was just talking to Tom a few minutes ago because you guys have been married for what now? Almost three years. And when you met him, you weren't a DXer. And we have all heard the stories of non-DXers and how they think people are very strange listening to radios at 3 o'clock in the morning, and thought we'd get a non-DXer's view of this. What did you think when Tom first started explaining to you what he did as a hobby?
Well, when we first met, he was not DXing real actively. He had the radio. He spent one afternoon trying to explain to me how to read the dial to understand what frequency we were on. I gave up on that after about one lesson. Then, after we'd been going out about a year, he got one with a digital frequency readout. I could understand that. after we got married, we attempted to set up a copper antenna which wrapped around the walls of our apartment. Then once we got the whole thing stuck up with poster putty and tacks, we realized that the radio that he had would not work well with any antenna except the one that was built into it. But we left the copper up for decoration for a while. A university apartment needs all the help it can get.
Did anyone ever question what this weird arrangement was on your walls?
Yes, because we also devote at least one wall to wherever we're living to QSLs and maps and other shortwave paraphernalia. So we have his wall, which is the messy one stuck up with all sorts of postcards and stickers, and my wall, which is the rest of our real art, paintings and things like that. So we've had a lot of questions. People come to visit us, want to know, you know, what all the QSLs are, where the postcards are, really fascinated by things that come from other parts of the world. So.
You know, the thing that I probably hear more than anything else, people kind of look and say, "You only listen." I mean, when Tom first explained it, did you keep asking where the microphone was or anything?
No, I think, thankfully, on his part, I didn't ever ask him if he was a ham, which seems to be everyone else's favorite question. So, no, I guess I could understand listening. I couldn't quite accept the hours that he listened at first. That was really hard because I am a morning person and he is a night person. And being a night person, he enjoys staying up till 3 or 4 in the morning, listening to the radio, playing with a computer, whatever. So we've kind of gotten to a compromise now where he has 3 nights with the radio and I get up the other 4.
Do you? That's interesting, but we won't pursue it. Have you started gaining an interest in DXing? I'm curious, you know, that you obviously, since you and Tom are so involved in SpeedX, I know you've been manning the table, I think, more than Tom here at Anarchon 86. Are you actually DXing some or not? I mean, I've heard different stories from different spouses coming through this weekend.
No, I don't DX at all unless if we're camping, then we work on it together. Like, for instance, we took a trip to the West Coast and we spent about 20 hours 100 feet from the ocean, only saw it twice because the rest of the time we were listening to China and Russia and everything else that we couldn't hear in Michigan. That was a lot of fun, though, because we were picking up things so fast that it was more active. I won't sit for an hour and wait for an ID or something like that. That just has no interest for me. But to sit and listen to a program, you know, while we're camping or while I'm doing the dishes or working in the kitchen on the BBC or something, that I really enjoy. The view of the people from where the station is coming, not the hunt to find the station.
Before we finish, you probably have got one really good story to tell. From way it sounds, you probably have several really good stories, but do you have one really good, not too bizarre story you can tell on the strange ways of a DXer from a non-DXer?
Well, it's hard to think of just one in particular. I'm sure I'm bound to have a few if I go on any of the Mare D expeditions, which Don Hosmer has threatened may be the end of my career as a wife as a DXer. No, I spent a lot of nights listening, sleeping until 3 in the morning when all of a sudden there will be a shriek from the downstairs of our apartment of some station, which I am then prodded awake. Tom heard a few weeks ago. I don't remember what it was, but it was one of the Latin American stations that their ID, they repeated themselves 3 or 4 times in a row, which he then repeated at least 11 or 12 times in a row as soon as he'd heard it while I was asleep upstairs, had no idea what was going on, let alone why it was going on downstairs of our apartment in Spanish. So some things like that, but I really try and be supportive of, you know, whatever he's doing in the hobby and keeps him out of trouble, and I don't mind that. And certainly all the people I've met through shortwave have been really interesting, so I think it's been as beneficial to me, even though I'm not a DXer, to be able to meet people in the hobby.
Good. Doreen, thanks a lot for joining me.
Thanks, Bob.
That's it for the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service for October 1986. We'll see you next month. This is Fred Voby speaking, and some highlights from the National Radio Club auction.
$1 for radioactive sense came with the chicken tonight. Chicken Kiev. Okay, $1.
That one, I don't know what that is.
Heck.
It's on the end of the desk.
Yeah,
right? Makes
yeah,
you look
yeah.
official.
Yeah, yeah. WBIT, the big wabbit, 912. This looks like a thermometer, one of those thermometers that goes across, except it's for people who don't care what the temperature is. It doesn't do anything.
That's to make you look important. Yeah. It goes on the end of your desk.
This means something really strange, those letters at the end. It's either that or in some language I don't know what is. Look at it and wear it. Is it all? No.